It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Coal companies are idling mines, allowing them to put cleanup work on hold using a regulatory loophole. We'll hear from a man who is trying to reform how the loophole is used.
I believe it is extremely unlikely that those mines will ever be activated again.
That story from the Ohio Valley Resource is just ahead. This is West Virginia Morning. More than 200 mines are idled or not producing coal across central Appalachia. About half of them have been that way for three or more years, avoiding regulatory requirements for cleanup. The Ohio Valley Resource partnered with the Center for Public Integrity to learn more about how mine operators capitalize on this regulatory loophole. In the second of two reports, Brittany Patterson introduces us to a resident who lives below a coal mine that has been idled for years.
I meet retired coal miner and mine inspector Larry Bush at a park in Appalachia, Virginia. He's lived in this small town most of his life. The 70-year-old wears reflective aviator glasses and a baseball cap that reads Vietnam Veteran. Bush is soft-spoken, but when I ask him about the coal industry, which has deeply shaped southwestern Virginia, he has plenty to say.
The mountains are beautiful. And then you go from looking at this and then go right across the road and you see nothing but a big gob pile.
Bush is familiar with gob piles, or mining debris. He lives below two coal mines operated by the family of West Virginia Governor Jim Justice. One of those is an active mine. The other, called Looney Ridge, is a surface mine owned by the Justice Group's A&G Coal and has been idle since 2013. It's one of more than 30 coal operations controlled by the Justice family that have been put in temporary cessation. The permit status is supposed to be temporary, but 15 Justice mines have been idled for three or more years, according to an analysis by the Center for Public Integrity. Bush has seen firsthand what can happen when mines are idled long-term.
There's a little stream right across the house in front of mine. Right behind it, there's a little stream that's pretty much filled up with silt. Nothing can live in it. I mean, there's nothing, I don't think.
Duke University professor Emily Bernhardt says, in addition to being unsightly, there are health and safety risks associated with leaving mines unreclaimed. Central Appalachia surface mining has been linked to health problems, ranging from cancer to birth defects. Mines left idled can expose residents to coal and silica dust. There's also a risk of landslides and flooding. During surface coal mining, operators pile tons of rock and liquid behind earthen dams. Bernhardt says when mines are left idle, it increases the potential for catastrophic failure.
You can't actually make any improvements when you're just sort of on hold.
In the past 15 years, coal production in Central Appalachia has dropped by half. Former mining regulator Joe Pizarczyk says coal's declining market could increase the chance that idled mines are abandoned, leaving their cleanup to the state and taxpayers.
I believe it is extremely unlikely that those mines will ever be activated again because the price of coal is never going to go up. The demand is only going to continue to shrink.
Pizarczyk led the Office of Surface Mining Reclamation and Enforcement, the federal agency in charge of regulating surface coal mines during the Obama administration. A 2010 survey of state regulators showed most thought there should be limits on how long mines could be idled. But Pizarczyk says since the 1990s, federal regulators have tried twice and failed to reform the way temporary cessation is used. Back in Appalachia, Larry Bush wants to see this region rebound as the coal industry declines, but he doesn't see how that can happen with idled mines left to sit like zombies in these mountains.
If they're not actively employing people or actively working the site, they should be forced to do their reclamation work instead of just leaving, well, raped out mountains.
For now, he'll spend his days making trips to the mines near his home, filing complaints with state regulators and hoping for progress. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson in Appalachia, Virginia.
This story was produced in partnership with the Center for Public Integrity. The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
And we'd like to invite you to be part of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's wonderful news and everything else that you hear right here. Why don't you do it at 1-800-RADIO-87? We're about halfway to that goal, Chuck.
We're getting there. Yes. Every little bit helps. When you call 1-800-RADIO-87 and protect and sustain your West Virginia Public Broadcasting like folks have been doing for over 50 years, Maryland.
That's right.
You're protecting and sustaining positions like Brittany Patterson and Glennis Board and all the folks in the newsroom that bring you the news and information that you want to hear. And it doesn't just stay here in West Virginia. That Ohio Valley Resource, easy for me to say, that Brittany's a part of, is a conglomerate with folks in Kentucky and Ohio and Pennsylvania telling the stories across the region that go national many times. So people want to know what's going on in your heartland, and we know that you want to do the same. So give us a call, 1-800-RADIO-87. That's 1-800-723-4687. Call that number. Let us hear about your stories, about the things that have impressed you over the past 50 years, Maryland, as part of your West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
1-800-RADIO-87.
Alexander Rosenstein is an orthopedic surgeon and a university professor who lives in Charleston, West Virginia, and in Hawaii. But as much as he loves being a doctor, he also loves spy thrillers. He grew up enthralled by Ian Fleming's books about James Bond. Now he's telling his own spy thriller stories with his debut novel, Sword of the Kremlin. It's set during the Cold War, but with a twist. He spoke to Eric Douglas to explain.
You're a physician. You obviously, you've had a successful career both in academia and medicine. Why write a novel? Where did that come from?
It's interesting. You know, some people who want to be an actor, they wait on tables until they have their break. So I love surgery. I love what I do. However, I always wanted to be a writer. Since I was a young teenager, I read a lot and really loved this world of fantasy. Actually, even more so, I love movies. So when I decided I'm going to write something, I want it to be visual. So the way I write, really, is like I'm watching miniseries. I just watch miniseries in my mind and write them down.
I thought you mentioned before we started recording that one of your role models was Ian Fleming and the James Bond series. Was that an inspiration for this? Or
I liked Ian Fleming as growing up. I loved reading the books, but my character, Oleg, is a bit different from James Bond. Even though he possesses a lot of skills, as James Bond would, but he's doing it sort of on a shoestring. He's doing it the Soviet way. He doesn't have Maseratis. He doesn't read vodka martinis. He doesn't drink vodka martinis. He just drinks vodka. He does things that need to be done without fancy gadgets.
I don't know the last time I read a story with the main character as a KGB agent as basically a hero. It's also interesting too that you have that history in growing up in the Soviet Union, or your family history, and I guess your parents immigrated out because of the oppression of Russian Jews and that sort of thing. I'm surprised there's no animosity. I'm surprised you think of it positively.
Well, I'm hoping that there's a little more understanding of our opponent. You know, the Soviet Union that's morphed into Russia and Ukraine and other independent republics, it presents a challenge right now for the United States. And I think it's a mistake just to vilify it instead of understand it. The only way you can effectively deal with your opponents or competitors or whatever you call it. I don't want to call enemies. I think they are our competitors, is by understanding them.
What did you learn from the writing process that surprised you? Writing fiction is different than writing academic treatises of whatever. But
yeah, I've written several articles, and they have to be very factual and they have to be very cold and unemotional. What I love about fiction is a power. You have an ultimate power over your characters, and that's it. Power comes with responsibility. So I like that sort of situation where I can actually mold their lives and write a story and hopefully keeping the reader interested.
I saw the note that you planned on making this a series. You plan to continue with Oleg through his career. Where does it go next?
Well, it's interesting that so this first book is taking place mostly in Moscow, but some of it takes place in Western Ukraine. The next book involves conflict between Russia and Ukraine. And it's I think it's a very interesting subject, historically very interesting. And again, it's based on some of historical events and my explanation of unexplained events that happened. I was also going to mention that I think being in West Virginia and writing where I was, so we bought this beautiful place in the South Hills, which had a running stream and surrounding by woods. I think to me, that was extremely helpful. I think it's very inspiring. I mean, someday this house will become national treasure, I hope. But
for what it's worth, I've always seen a lot of parallels between the people of Russia, the people of West Virginia.
Yeah, as a story progresses, and I hope to have several novels with the same character, main character, I would like to bring him to West Virginia eventually. So at first, now he was strictly in Russia, maybe a little bit of in West Ukraine. Then next is going to be Ukraine. And as also my second book involved not only conflict between Russia and Ukraine, but also Russia and a predominantly Muslim countries that used to be part of Soviet Union. So there's a lot that's going on that people don't quite know or understand.
We've covered pretty much all the major questions that I wanted to ask. Is there anything that we haven't talked about yet?
I think there is something to be learned from this book. I hope that people like it and enjoy it. I think it's an escape. And I want them to subtly learn things without straining themselves.
That was Dr. Alexander Rosenstein talking with Inside Appalachia associate producer Eric Douglas about the origins of his novel, Sword of the Kremlin. This interview is part of a series of discussions with authors from the region. Joey Ryan and Kenneth Pattingale are the singers, songwriters, and guitarists that comprise the modern folk duo, the Milk Carton Kids. Their performance of Morning in America is our Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
Fell asleep with the TV on, finally feeling like I belong. Woke up to a funeral song. Called you up to say hello. Left a message for you at home. Packed my dishes in styrofoam. Everything I knew was gone. It's raining in Ohio. The streets are slick. It shows what I know. I hear their cries through my window. They're mourning again in America. Morning again in America. Tied my shoes when I woke up. Drew my curtains just enough. Thought about the ones I love. Tucked my chin into my coat. Shrugged my shoulders, cleared my throat. Walking banks of the Ohio.
You can hear the Milk Carton Kids' entire set on this week's new episode of Mountain Stage. Tune in to West Virginia Public Broadcasting tonight at 8 and tomorrow night. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.